Okay, so picking up on slide 9, we have here examples of racial microaggressions. And it's slides 9 through 11. So as I was saying before, I really like these slides because they show the themes, the microaggressions themselves, and the underlying messages that can be hard to decipher if we're not used to thinking about microaggressions, or especially if we've committed one, we may not understand what that underlying message is. So if you look on slide 9, you'll see a lot of different themes. We don't have to go through each one of them, but some that that are really striking to me is the theme of the alien in our own land. So the assumption that Asian Americans and Latino Americans must be foreign-born, so they're not actually, you know, quote, American. So the microaggressions that go along with this theme can be, where are you from? Where were you born? Kind of like in the, excuse me, in Daryl Sue's video, you speak good English, was a microaggression that was in that video as an example. Or if you ask an Asian American to teach them words in their native language. So this sounds so benign, right? I mean, because it's not a bad thing if somebody were not to be born in the U.S. and if English is not your native language, it's not this bad thing. But when we make that error with someone just because of what their race is, then it can send that underlying message that you're not an American, you don't belong here, or you're a foreigner. So we have to keep that in mind. Another theme that I think is pretty common is colorblindness, which are statements that indicate that a white person does not want to acknowledge race. And this is also something that may not be conscious. I really think that when I've heard certain individuals in my personal life talk about being colorblind, I don't think that what they're trying to say is that the racial experiences of other people are unimportant. I don't think they're trying to convey that at all. I think they're trying to convey a message of acceptance. That's my guess. But we have to remember that intention does not equal impact. And we really have to think about impact. I think that's especially true in the context of therapy. So to be aware, not just the message that we're trying to send, but how that message is going to be received. So examples of colorblindness microaggressions would be, when I look at you, I don't see color, or America is a melting pot, or there is only one race, the human race. And the underlying messages can be denying a person of color's racial or ethnic experiences, telling them to assimilate to the dominant culture, or denying the individual as a racial human being. I know this has gotten very political, and I know it's very controversial and a sensitive subject, but I think something that is relevant to that's going on currently that's relevant to colorblindness is Black Lives Matter versus All Lives Matter. I know that All Lives Matter is really created as a reaction to Black Lives Matter. And I know, again, that this can be pretty touchy, and I know people kind of think about these movements differently. But when we say that all lives matter in response to Black Lives Matter, from what I've heard from people and what I read, it can really be interpreted as undermining Black Lives Matter, kind of saying, no, it's not Black Lives that matter, it's all lives that matter. And I know that that's not explicitly colorblindness, but it's related to that. I think of it as being actually very similar to colorblindness, because what they're saying essentially in All Lives Matter, I think the underlying message can be that blacks are really not treated any different than whites. There is no problem really with being black. Like, we're, you know, there isn't any differential treatment that's going on. Nothing really bad is happening to the black community. There is no excessive use of force. Blacks are not dying at the hands of police any differently than whites overall. So it it really undermines, I think, that struggle and the message that all, or that Black Lives Matter is trying to share. So it's kind of like responding to complaints about racial inequalities with, well, I don't see color, you know, well, all lives matter, which, of course, that statement is very true. All lives do matter. But when it's in the context of being a response to Black Lives Matter, then it takes on a very different feeling. So again, it's something that's benign and I think is meant, and I've seen this so much, especially on social media like Facebook, good friends of mine posting All Lives Matter. And I think what they're really trying to say is that all lives matter, that they care about everyone. And I think that includes people of color. But it always strikes me in a very negative way. And it always hurts when I see that, because I know that that movement came out of a response to Black Lives Matter and really is oftentimes a way of minimizing the struggles of that population. So, again, I know this is a controversial subject, but one that is just really, really relevant, I think, to colorblindness. Going to the next slide, slide 10. One theme is criminality or assumption of criminal status. So this would be like a person of color is presumed to be dangerous, criminal, deviant based on their race. So you see this in, again, Daryl Tsu's video where the white woman does not get on the elevator and clutches her necklace and her purse when she sees a black man. So that's the, you know, the message that's sent there is that he's dangerous. He's going to steal from her. He's a criminal. So another example might be a store owner following a customer of color around the store. This happened to me in China, actually. My husband and I, when we were there, and I don't know. I mean, this might just be the norm in China. I'm not really sure. But I can tell you that being followed around in a store with people staring at you is extremely uncomfortable and awkward. But the message there is that maybe you're steel or you're poor, you don't belong. That was definitely the feeling I had. Let's see. Another theme is denial of individual racism. A statement made when whites deny their racial biases. So you see this when you hear something like, I'm not racist, I have several black friends. Actually, this was a statement made by, I'm not remembering his name, but with the Oklahoma fraternity last year, rather the song about the lynchings, about lynching African Americans, one of the young man's parents, some of you might remember this, actually wrote a letter, a response, apologizing on behalf of their son, and they mentioned, we have a diverse group of friends. When I read that part, again, it's just something that, you know, I think was well-meaning, but really struck a nerve. It's like, well, what does that prove, that you have a diverse group of friends? It's actually a microaggression. I think the underlying message, and I think it's verbalized really well here in this chart with underlying messages, because I had a hard time myself just knowing why it struck a chord, what was offensive about it, even though I felt that it was offensive. And it's really the message is that I'm immune to racism because I have friends of color. So I'm not racist because I can't be racist. I've talked to, you know, Asian Americans before. Another one would be, as a woman, I know what you go through as a racial minority. Underlying message being, your racial oppression is no different than my gender oppression. I can't be a racist because I'm exactly like you. So presuming that we know or understand other people's lived experiences automatically, just because we in some ways belong to a marginalized class, and it can go vice versa. You know, it can be that, you know, a person of color says that to a woman, you know, a male person of color saying to a woman, well, I understand because I'm a person of color, when really these experiences can be highly unique. The next one is the myth of meritocracy. So this is statements that assert that race really doesn't play a role in life's successes or failures. And a few slides from now is a Lacey Green video where she talks about her experience with a family member saying, you know, Black people just have a bad, just basically a bad culture, and they make bad decisions, and nobody makes them make bad decisions. These are just choices. So it's kind of saying that race plays no role, and you make your own choices, and if you're doing well, it's because, you know, you tried hard and you worked hard, and if you're not doing so well, you must be lazy or up to no good or not focused. So a microaggression could be, I believe that the most qualified person should get the job. And this is so insidious because, of course, kind of at face value, that is true, right? The best person, the most qualified person for the job should get the job. I mean, that is true. However, when we're saying this, it can also kind of give a flavor, send the message of people of color are given extra unfair benefits because of their race. So it might really be kind of a cloaked statement against affirmative action policies, for instance. Another one that's a little more blatant is everyone can succeed in the society if they work hard enough. So the underlying message being people of color are lazy and are incompetent and they just need to work harder. If you just work harder, then things will go better. And what that does is it really ignores different people's circumstances and the impact of different aspects of identity on people's opportunities and the opportunities that came before them with their parents and their grandparents. I mean, it's ignoring kind of the entire history of that group. The next one is pathologizing cultural values or communication styles. So basically what you're saying is that whatever the dominant culture does, whatever the communication style is, or the culture of the dominant culture, which is usually the culture that has the most power in a society, that if you're not in line with that, then there's something wrong with you. You need to change. So it's asking a black person, why do you have to be so loud or animated? Just calm down. Or to an Asian or Latino American, why are you so quiet? Want to know what you think? Speak up more. You need to be louder. We're dismissing an individual who brings up race or culture in a work or school setting. So hidden messages here say you need to assimilate to the dominant culture and you need to leave your cultural baggage outside, that it's just not relevant here. Unfortunately, applying this to therapy, this happens and it's a big issue. So if you look at racial disparities, like the racial disparity research, you'll see that there is a tendency to over-pathologize, for instance, black children. So more likely to diagnose them with ADHD, as they get older, more likely to diagnose them with having a psychotic disorder, which then has implications for how they're managed, how they're treated, medicated, how they're treated in school. So we as psychologists really need to pay attention to this and how culture plays a role in how how people communicate with one another, and to realize that it's not always the case that because someone presents a little bit differently that there's something wrong with them. That's just really about cultural competence, which we'll be talking about soon too. Okay, so the last slide, slide 11, if you look at the top left, it says second class citizen. This occurs when a white person is given preferential treatment as a consumer over a person of color. So you might see microaggressions where a person of color is mistaken for a service worker, maybe a taxi passing a person of color and picking up a white passenger, or passing a woman and picking up a man, being ignored at a store counter, and people behind you getting attention. You see it with the statement, sentences that begin with "you people." And so the hidden messages here can be that people of color are servants to whites. They couldn't possibly occupy high status positions. With a cab passing you by, it could be, if you're a woman and it passes you by, that you're just not as important as a man. Where you're going is not as important. Or if you're a person of color, it could be that you're likely to cause trouble or that you're dangerous. And maybe the whites are valued more as customers than people of color, so they're given more attention as customers. Or there could be an assumption that whites have more money. I think it's another one too. And finally, environmental microaggressions. And these are so tough, I think, to battle. Some of these other ones, when they occur in kind of an isolated incident, you can learn how to pick up on them. You can address them. It's difficult, but it's doable. Environmental microaggressions are these macro-level microaggressions which are more apparent on systemic and environmental levels. So we're talking about laws, policies, sometimes very sneaky in large ways that the isms, the bigotries are perpetuated. So an example of an environmental microaggression might be that you go to a college or university and all the buildings are named after white heterosexual upper-class males. And so the subtle message is you don't belong if you don't fall into this group, or there's only so far you can go. Television shows or movies maybe that that show, I mean, for instance, romantic relationships as being pretty much always heterosexual. We'll be looking at privilege handouts a little bit later, and there's one privilege handout that addresses heterosexual privilege, and one of the ways that heterosexual folks have privilege that's listed is that you can pretty much be sure that when you turn on the TV or you go to movies, you're going to have examples of how to have romantic relationships. The way that you love and the way you have romantic relationships is going to be depicted widely. So that's kind of what this microaggression is getting at, even though it's talking about race. You know, television shows or movies that tell the stories of white folks, that tell the stories of men. Of course, that's been in the news a whole lot lately. A lot's been written on Hollywood being male-dominated and men getting paid more, and just criticisms about how we continue to tell men's stories with women as accessories, basically. But it's definitely the case with heterosexual relationships that that's pretty much all we see at the movie theater and on TV shows, with very, very few exceptions. And that's an environmental microaggression. I think some really compelling ones, if you go to the next slide, slide 12, come from Lacey Green. So she, some of you might know already who she is. Really common. She's been on MTV a lot. Very young, Berkeley graduate, actually. Young feminist. She's all about the sex positive movement and positive relationships and sexuality. And she made a video fairly recently, and I think the name of it is Racism Over? And it's kind of Racism 101, and talks a little bit about the systemic and environmental factors or policies that keep this going and why racism is still happening, but how it is subtle. So essentially she's talking about microaggressions, and she's talking about environmental microaggressions, although she doesn't actually use that term. So I'm going to give us a few minutes to watch the video. Go ahead when you're ready and begin to watch it. The link is right there on slide 12. It'll be about 5 minutes, and I will resume at that time. Okay. So I really like this video because Lacey Green puts a lot of information in a very, very short period of time. And it's extremely compelling. And these are some of the, I think, the best examples of racial environmental microaggressions that there are. And it explains a whole lot, I think. I'm going to go ahead and pause for now and have us pick up on slide 13 for the next audio part. So part three will start at slide 13.